You're a physician assistant in the United Kingdom, and how long have you been practicing for?
So about 2.5 years now.
And you told me that the program started in 2003, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's when the first kind of American PAs came over on a trial basis, kind of to the UK. UKPA, which is the kind of professional body for the UK PAs, started in 2005 in kind of in light of this kind of movement of PAs across the States. It's about the 10-year anniversary. See how the role would fit and see what the interest was in the role itself. This later led to 2006, the Department of Health writing the Competence and Curriculum Framework for PAs, which is the kind of the documentation on which all PA schools and all PAs are taught. And the document also stipulates what a newly qualified PA can and cannot do. So that's kind of a Bible, if you like.
So currently, how many PAs are there in the UK?
There's approximately about 200 PAs qualified now, in around about 196, I believe. I mean, for PAs, the market's very rich. I mean, I believe in the last kind of, I don't know, 6 to 12 months, there's been about 135 job applications actually come out on the market for in the space of time when only 35 PAs have qualified. So it's a very rich time for PAs. I mean, our major focus in the UK is actually getting more PA schools opened, and therefore, you know, seeing more throughput to meet the demand. You know, the supply at the moment is much less than what the demand is, which is, again, I think adds strength to the case of PAs, really.
So one of the things that's interesting to me is that you're telling me a huge success story about bringing PAs into the UK. I'm currently in South Africa. They're in their third year and they're having a really hard time having the healthcare system absorb them. Can you tell me if you know why the United Kingdom has been so successful in getting PAs incorporated into the healthcare system?
I'd say that the success is only just, you know, showing its ugly head, or shall I say. I mean, it's taken, like I said, more than 10 years or 10 years or so for actually to the fruits of our labour to actually start coming to ripe. I guess one of the major factors for us at the moment is we just received invitation from the Royal College of Physicians to have faculty within them. So they're going to offer us legal support, admin, all the rest of it to help push for regulation, which is something that we lack as a profession. I think until we get regulation and with that prescribing rights, both for medication and for ionising radiation, I don't think the support will be quite what it might be long term, what we desire it to be as a profession. There's a lot of negativity still, potentially from junior doctors is some sort of negativity. There's always those as well who aren't privy to change. So I think it's only now that we're starting to see the fruits of our labour. And I think the reason why we're seeing those is just because of relentless efforts of many people, whether it be educators, PAs, volunteers, or just pure advocates of the profession, whether it be patients or not. There's been lots of people who've worked hard to get the profession known, push for more courses, to lobby on the behalf of the profession, whether it be at local government, national government, commissioning level, CC, you know, whatever it might be. You know, it's been, I think, a lot of hard work. Finally, I think a multitude of all those factors are finally coming to a head. I don't think there's one particular person or one particular event as the turning point. It's been a sustained effort from a multitude of people.
Said you were talking about prescribing privileges. So PAs in the
Yeah.
United Kingdom cannot prescribe prescriptions at this point?
Not at the moment, no. Because we're not a regulated profession, we're unable to prescribe. You know, there's laws in the UK which enable nurses, physiotherapists, even podiatrists to prescribe. Again, the reason why they can go on and take advanced prescribing courses is because they're regulated professions, so they have some accountability there and some indemnity. Obviously, as we lack regulation, like I said, we don't have that. So it's not until we get regulated, hopefully with the help of the RCP, the Royal College of Physicians, that, you know, those privileges will come. If there is one limitation from the perspective of the individual PAs, and also from the perspective of junior doctors and also employers, i.e. consultants or HR, you know, heads of HR, what have you, hospitals or trusts, I think if they said what is the major limitation of PAs, it would be that. So certainly, it's something that needs to be addressed. And I mean, I think the scope of practice and the acceptance and the kind of the want of PAs will increase tenfold once the prescribing abilities actually do come.
It sounds like the healthcare system is behind you. Is that fair to say?
It's getting there. Yeah, definitely getting there.
In United Kingdom, they have universal healthcare coverage. Does that, do you think, help your organization in a sense that physician assistants as an organization will have full support?
just that question there, one of the changes we made recently was we changed the name of the profession to Vision Associates, which I, again, speaking to some colleagues in the States, is something that has brought about some debate and some questioning. Again, that is on the questioning from the Department of Health. And again, is we made the change with support of our members to try and lobby for regulation. We're doing all that we can as a profession, and I'm the current UCAPPER, so that's the UK Association of PAs, Vice President. You know, as a body, UCAPPER, we're doing everything we can as well to get regulation as soon as possible. So
that's really exciting. It sounds like it's coming together.
Yeah, I think it is. It's like any new profession, isn't it? It's quite common knowledge that it's due to the change in the coalition government why our application for regulation was halted. Our profession was deemed as not at risk, and therefore progress was put on hold. That's quite common knowledge, as far as I'm aware. And I mean, that's something that's, you know, is far bigger than, you know, any of us can control or make claim to.
I know that you're still putting together the scope of practice, but essentially, what do PAs do in the UK? What job roles do they have?
PAs working 35 trusts now. There's a huge number of PAs working in primary care, which I think is in fitting with you know, the US as well. The only real specialty that PAs don't work in the UK is obs and gynae. The reason being is obviously we have midwives who would play a very similar role, kind of mid-level practitioner role that we would end up playing if we were to work in such a discipline, despite the differences in our training and background. Use myself as an example. I work in trauma and orthopaedic surgery. So a typical day for me would be we have teaching every morning, 8 a.m., followed by what we call screens, so reviewing all the new patients. We then go and do a consultant-led ward round, so senior-led ward round. Following that, we do shed load of jobs if necessary. So the requesting of scans as able, reviewing patients, teeing up patients for surgery. We then, you know, have a list of existing patients we go around and see. That'd be a mixture of paediatric and adult, elective and trauma. We go and see them. I mean, I've been qualified 2.5 years now, so I typically go and see my own patient set. You know, we have docs there or senior docs if we need to liaise with them or if they're sick, what have you. But we typically do all the jobs or task or care for them when they're unwell. Also first assistant in theatre and get into clinic as much as possible as well. So that the scope of practice, I think, is very much determined by the individual, you know, and how he or she is appraised, but also by, you know, what department or specialty they're working in. I think that's probably the best answer to that question, actually, if I'm honest.
No, that sounds good. And the other thing is, so do you do any special training to specialise in orthopaedics, or do you just take the job and get trained on the job?
It's pretty much the latter. So okay. You pretty much get trained on the job, really. Just like in the US and like any other country, I guess everyone shows a preference to what specialty they want to go in based on their previous background or you know, or their interests. I mean, one piece of work I'm working on at Swindon, which I hope to be Swindon Great Western Hospital, which I hope to actually roll out across the whole of the UK, make it a national documentation, is actually specialty portfolios and advanced specialty portfolios and programs, so that, you know, a PA can perhaps gain some kind of nominal qualification or you know, at least show to that they do work at a certain level or function within a certain specialty. So that's kind of documentation ongoing. I mean, that kind of thing hasn't happened yet, nor has the idea of any internships. I mean, the competence curriculum framework, which I suggested to you earlier on, that strongly suggests that PA should undergo an internship post-qualification. Mm-hmm. However, very few do that because the documentation and the kind of the guidance nationally isn't really in place. Again, it's another piece of work I'm trying to work on to try and, you know, create a national kind of framework for this in hope that we can, you know, kind of provide more career progression, if that makes any sense, mm-hmm. and also some more structure to the career and the profession per se. I guess it all comes back to the fact that, you know, the profession is, and the careers per se, is still very, very fresh. It's still very new. But I think we've like I said to you already, we've come a long way in the few years that we have been around.
Yeah, you have. The fact that you're seriously considering internships is huge. You know, in the United States, we've talked about that, but we've never actually got it going.
It's a huge piece of work I'm working on, but generally the sport is there. No matter who you ask, whether it be consultants, employers, educators, or PAs themselves, I think everyone's in support of the idea. You just need to get, you know, the infrastructure in place first, and I'm sure you'd agree that's the most important thing to do.
As an American PA, I think internships are just really important. And I think if the more we serve in primary care, the more important it is to create internships. So I think you're doing amazing work. You were telling me a little bit before we started talking about the program you're starting. Can you tell me about that?
Part of all this, the work I just mentioned to you, the internship and the post-qualification PA education and training, full stop, I'm opening a program or a course at Reading University. So there's some interest there from the School of Pharmacy to look at opening a PA school within their college. I'm working with all the PA educators in the UK and also with Swindon Great Western Hospital, where I am based, and I'm also doing some work, as I just mentioned, to see if we can offer placement provision and see whether there'd be the interest in obviously training and employing PAs in the kind of southwest of England where Reading is situated. As I mentioned earlier on, you have kind of courses in Aberdeen, which is very, very far north in Scotland, and you have them in Birmingham and soon to be Worcester and then St George's. So there's really, you know, there's a real need to have a course in and around the Reading or Swindon area. So that's that. Again, that comes part and parcel of the work I'm working on. It's quite interesting, actually, and it actually is massive insight work on this kind of idea. A lot of things, like the sign off from the university, is something that's independent of myself and my efforts, but certainly a course won't be able to open unless, you know, there's local hospitals that can offer placement provision and there's, you know, generally support of PAs, full stop. So yeah, that's a bit about that, really. So
but you've said there was 135 job openings for PA, yeah. So clearly it's taking off.
It's clearly taking off, like I said. I think that's the reason why so many, like I said, there's five or six other courses who have kind of come to the table to show their interest in you know, in opening PA schools in the next kind of 12 to 18 months. So yeah, clearly there is the interest there. And obviously with that, there has to be the backing from, you know, the commissioners and the local education authorities as well. So clearly there's kind of a global kind of, you know, support network building up as well, which is an important thing.
How do students find out about the program? Tell me, how did the United Kingdom get the word out about the whole PA profession so that students applied?
Well, I guess different institutes use different tacks, really. But I mean, certainly at Birmingham, I just happened to stumble across it using internet, on an internet search, more than anything else. I understand most, the target audience really is those of a healthcare primary undergraduate degree, and also those with relevant healthcare experience. So I know most universities like Birmingham and St George's, they email all their previous biomedical science graduates, say, pharmacy, sports science graduates, as a way of trying to gain interest and gain applicants. As more and more people are being treated by a PA, you know, more and more people are actually getting privy to what the actual concept is, whether it be through family members, the media, or what have you. I think, you know, you're getting more applications and more interest from those routes as well. For me, it's a stroke of luck, not genius. But yeah, I think it's very much spreading. And one thing we've talked about, as you know, as an entity in the UK profession recently, is actually looking at actually funding tabloid articles and stuff like that to actually really get sales out, you know, really get interest. That's something that's at the kind of the forefront of our minds again as well. What I understand from the recent interview they held at Birmingham University and also St George's, again, they're getting, you know, 200, 250 strong applicants for 30, 35 posts. So the strength of applicants is getting is really high as well, and the interest to actually study to be a PA is there, as is the interest to actually employ PAs. So it's, you know, the future's looking bright, like I said.
Besides the challenges you talked about in terms of scope of practice, are there any besides the junior doctors, talk a little more about the challenges that PAs face in the United Kingdom.
Although I said that recognition is on the increase, I think we need to get, you know, recognised furthermore. At the moment, we're still an entity of 200 PAs qualified, plus those who, you know, those are teaching and those who are teaching us. That's still a very small number that could easily be, you know, forgotten about. I think that's our major challenge, really. The NHS in the UK is faced with some torrid times as well. I'm not sure how much you guys have looked in the newspapers, but the financial implications that the NHS is kind of suffering at the moment are quite huge. Something called the Nicholson efficiency savings, where the NHS has been, you know, told it has to make £20 billion worth of savings in the next couple of years. That's terrible. There's, you know, there's a massive supply versus demand And generally staffing levels across nursing, medical, all disciplines of healthcare really are, and social care, there aren't the staff to fill the vacancies, so it just adds to the cause and adds to the case of PAs, I guess. Actually, I'd say the situation being what it is could affect us negatively, but actually I think is in our favour. I mean, there's some changes to the junior doctor training, their foundation training, which suggests that in light of the efficiency savings I mentioned, that they're going to stop junior doctors. I don't know if you guys are quite privy to the junior doctor training, but they do what they call foundation year training. So once they qualify for medical school, they do an FY1, foundation year one, and a foundation year two years. They basically do 6 placements over 2 years. And typically, especially an aspiring surgeon, say, would typically do, say, a general surgical placement in their first year and then go and do an orthopedic placement in their second year. From this year, they're actually making them only do 1 surgical placement per 2 years, and they're also making them do 1 GP, so 1 primary care setting placement over their 2 years as well. What this means is acute hospitals like my own, say Swindon Great Western Hospital, are going to start losing training posts. The knock-on effect of this is that there's going to be obviously a massive gap at the junior workforce. So I think it's been predicted that in my trust alone, we're going to lose 17 middle grade doctors by 2017 compared to today. So really the answer is to fill them with PAs, because there's no other kind of healthcare professional in the UK which we can fill them with, really. You know, nurses can look at extended role profiles for nurses to a certain extent, but, you know, they're very much for a nursing model rather than a medical model in terms of their training and background. So there's only so much they can do. And like I said, if the doctors aren't there to fill the post and treat the patients, then what is the other option? So I guess that in answer to your question, that certainly, you know, There are some potential complications still with the profession and its progression and its development. But I mean, I guess they're ever changing, and I guess actually the tide is very much in our favour. I think it's a fair way of putting it.
You talked about nurses. Do you have any kind of, so there is some kind of nurse specialty thing? Do they manage chronic disease? Is their field somewhat threatened by the development of the PA? Talk a little bit about that.
So the scope of practice between a nurse practitioner and a PA is very similar. Nurses come from obviously follow a nursing model compared to a medical model which a PA follows. Typically a nurse practitioner would specialise in a certain discipline or a certain department. So for example, you might be a nurse practitioner specialising in diabetes or hypertension, or, you know, or trauma and orthopedics. So they're very much kind of streamlined and specialised, whereas a PA obviously remains as a generalist. Just like in the US, we still recertify. We uphold 40 hours of CPD per year, or your CME, and we also recertify every 6 years by national exams, or recertification exams. So we're very much generalists, so we still have that ability to move from one, you know, from one specialty to another. I guess that's a major difference between the two of us, but actually, you know, there has been some instances where, you know, departments or clinicians have favoured the nurse practitioner over the employment of a PA. But again, I guess it depends on what they're looking for, and you know what their population and what their department needs, I guess.
Their training model is entirely different too. You refer to that.
Like I said, there's very much a nursing model. So that, you know, these guys are typically they've come up and. The typical progression for a nurse in the UK is they do a 3-year, it's a degree program now, including the thesis. So they do a 3-year degree program, become a staff nurse. They typically work in a ward or community setting. After a few years, they may progress to be a sister, so a more senior nurse. They may then go into a more specialised role or senior sister role. And they can then go on and do further examination, become, you know, nurse practitioners or specialist nurses. So, you know, that, you know, they are very experienced individuals, and they often end up specialising within the department or the area or department, you know, which they've, you know, worked in for many, many, many years.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting. What do you all want us to know about United Kingdom PAs?
I guess a lot of people don't know about the situation of the PAs in the UK. So I guess this is where this interview would be, you know, very insightful and very helpful. Actually, myself and my colleague Theresa Dowsing, who is the president of UCAPA, we've written an article for the JAPA publication, which hopefully would be out relatively soon, again, to try and, you know, get around that issue, is you know, that, you know, we all are very proud of being PAs and, you know, very proud of the history of the profession. And this is why many of us, 10 or 15 or more, are coming over to the AAPA conference in Boston this year.
Wow.
All self-funded, because we really realize, you know, the importance of maintaining good links with America, you know, and AAPA and, you know, and all the rest of it. So, yeah, so we're looking forward to that. I guess leaning on to that, one issue that perhaps some people may have picked up on, I've had the odd conversation, maybe through LinkedIn or via email, with regards to the name change, as I mentioned earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
We changed our name to Vision Associates rather than Assistants, with support of our members, on the say-so of the Department of Health, really. It strongly recommended that would help us push the regulation. It's nothing against the Vision Assistant title or the role of, you know, PAs in the US or the history of the profession. It's just purely because, like I said, we're locally in the UK, we're pushing for regulation, and that's the most important thing, like I said, to be able to gain prescribing rights and get the profession moving forward that we need. So, if there's any message I could send to the US, I guess, and further afield, it's that, you know, we're very proud of where we come from, and we would welcome all of your help and support in helping us push further forward still. So,
that's great. Thank you very much for talking to me.
You're more than welcome. Thank you, Marie.